Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and PT pearls to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
So we've been dropping hints a little bit here and there about something really exciting that Vivo Barefoot does every year, which is their Shoespiracy campaign. And I just love this because I love the term Shoespiracy. We are living in the grand Shoespiracy. All these shoe companies that keep building up these things under our feet that basically tell our feet, you can't do it on your own. It's time to tear that all down. And it's time to tear down that narrative that we need things in our shoes or we need things around our feet so that we can go out and move the way we want to. That is absolute BS. It's time to free the feet. It's time to take our feet out of those prisons and start to teach them that they can do things on their own. We can do the things that our feet were specifically built for. We have the muscles. We have all of the components in our feet to support our own arch, to move our toes, and to teach our bodies how to move more freely and connect with the ground. So go over to Vivo's website and check out some of the Shoespiracy materials that they have, and also go and check out a pair of Vivo Barefoot shoes for yourself. Seriously, if you wear these things for 6 months, they've been shown to increase our overall strength by up to 60%. That's a real study that was done using Vivo Barefoot shoes. And also, if you don't like them or if you think you need a new size, you have 100 days to send them back and get a different pair. Check them out.
We've had a code change, so make sure you use code TOB so that you get 15% off. That is TOB, like the Optimal Body Podcast. Thanks for joining us on another podcast. Today, we're talking about Baker cyst, which actually, funny enough, I had. I was in college and I think I was just... It was when I was coaching and I like bent over and felt the back of my knee and I was like, oh my, there's a lump back there. Why is there a squishy lump in the back of my knee? Yeah, that happened.
It can be kind of concerning. I mean, anytime you're feeling into a joint or an area or anywhere on your body and you feel this big like lumpiness.
It was like a jelly lump. It was like a hard one at least.
Yeah, but it can be kind of concerning. Like, what is this? What is this thing growing on my knee? Uh-huh. And like... Mm-hmm. What the heck do I do about it? So a lot of people can kind of like have that initial like, oh my gosh, there's this big thing growing in my knee.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I think cysts are like people recognize them a lot, you know, around the body, whether it's on the wrist. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about wrist issues before. So definitely go back and look at that one if you do have cysts of the wrist, because what we're going to explain today, especially when it comes to Baker cyst, is really just another condition around the knee, which we've already done podcasts about.
And really, when we talk into the knee, like, it's crazy all the intricacies of the anatomy of the knee, right? Mm-hmm. There's so many parts, so many muscles that are crossing from the hip into the knee or the upper leg into the lower leg and then calf the down leg. Into the foot. Yep. Like, there are things that go all the way to the tips of our toes that originate in our knees and all the way up almost above our hips that go to the knee. So it's a crossroad for so many different things that are going on.
Yeah. So what is a Baker cyst? I think that's, you know, initially just do you want to go into
the how Baker cyst is the benign fluctuant growth of fluid between the bursa or from the bursa of the semimembranosus.
Come on, don't get it wrong.
I totally effed it up just now. But it's basically a fluctuating gathering of fluid.
Like a sac-like fluid.
Sac-like fluid that happens a lot from the bursa, which is basically this thing that produces fluid. Mm-hmm. You know, our bursa are very important because they produce fluid for our joints to stay lubricated. But if a bursa gets irritated, that's where sometimes we'll get bursitis. And in those conditions, sometimes that thing just starts kicking out lots of fluid.
Right.
And there's one right between the head of our gastric nemius, which is one of the primary muscles of our calf that crosses the knee, and our semimembranosus, which is one of our hamstrings that kind of comes down on the inside of the knee and crosses right in the same area that our gastric nemius or our calf does.
Yeah, and you just feel it right in the back of that knee. And really, when you're to distinguish it from kind of from anything else, I mean, one, they say to, you know, definitely go get it assessed and checked out just in case, because anytime you're feeling an odd lump right on your body, you don't want to just guess what it may be. However,
it usually goes away if you bend your knee. So it's not like you can still feel it or anything. And then it comes back when you straighten out your knee.
Yeah. And one of the things that we saw in a few different studies and you know, websites that we were looking at is that a lot of these will go undiagnosed or missed if it's just a physical examination that someone's doing. Because again, like, it fluctuates. So it might be larger or smaller. It might be towards the inside or the outside of the knee. And the classic way to find it is straighten the leg all the way out. And then do you feel a lump? If it's not directly kind of in that place where the gastroc and the hamstring are crossing, or the calf and the hamstring are crossing, then it might not appear as much when you straighten the leg all the way out if it's slightly more to the outside of the knee.
Right. And that's when I felt it. I remember I just like had my leg up on a pole and I was like stretching forward, and I bent over and felt the back of my knee, and I'm just like, oh my, what is that? But now I've learned so much more about my body, and I can even talk about why I believe that I did have a Baker cyst when we get into, you know, some of the things that you can do about it. But it is most common in adults 35 to 70, which is a very wide range of adulthood. And it's usually, I mean, if it's in children, usually what you're seeing is kind of like a herniation of that tissue in the back.
Yeah, because in kids, we know that our tissues are a little more malleable. Yeah. And before something actually will rupture, or before a tendon will rupture, we might see something like that, a herniation, where the synovial joint doesn't actually like rupture and fluid doesn't leak out, but we're seeing like a herniation of the synovium. Again, there's so many layers in the knee joint that I don't want this to become an anatomy lesson as much as it's an accumulation of fluid.
Exactly.
There's four or five different ways that can happen. You can have leak of the synovial fluid, you can have this bursa that's kicking out a bunch of fluid, you can have a herniation of that area like you had said. So few different things that can cause this fluctuation of fluid, fluctuant benign growth in the back of the knee. But again, like you said, anytime there's a growth, there's other things that we might want to make sure that it's not.
Yes. And you know, what's commonly found in adulthood, especially when you recognize that you have a Baker cyst, is that usually there's other kind of degeneration or trauma that's happened at the knee, whether it's osteoarthritis, whether it's meniscus, whether it's just extra pressure that you've been putting over time on that knee. And what do you know? Fluid is building up.
I think I saw one study that I was looking at, which this is what makes me laugh about studies, especially meta-analyses that group all these studies and read them. It said, when there's other knee pathology, from 5 to 32% of the time, you'll find a Baker cyst. And I'm like, 5 to 32% of the time? So I'm like, okay, either one out of every 20 or one out of every three. Like, so that's, you know, why we take all research with a grain of salt, because the main message is, with concurrent knee pathology, there might be more likely to be this accumulation of fluid, which makes a lot of sense. Because if there's 100%. Other knee pathology going on, there's likely slightly more inflammation, there's probably more of a chance of this fluid accumulating.
Yeah. And it's not likely that you're going to really do anything, honestly, about a Baker cyst. I was young when I had, so I was in my early 20s, I believe. And it was in for some other reason. I was just like, hey, can you check out the back of my knee too? And really what they said was just like, oh, they usually go away on their own. Like, didn't refer me out to anyone, didn't tell me to go to physical therapy. And really, I only saw very few Baker cysts when I was in the clinic. And it was always usually associated with something else. So we're not usually just treating a Baker cyst. It's not usually something to pay attention to. Can it rupture? Yes. And then you might just have like a water rushing feeling down your leg, need to prop it up a little bit, rest. But
yeah, when we take away the initial thing that might have caused or perpetuated this accumulation of fluid in the first place, I mean, a lot of the recommendations we saw is like, modify your activity. Mm-hmm. What are you doing? Are you doing a lot of a certain type of thing that is pushing your knee into the maximal ranges of motion? Are you doing a lot of impact activity when you maybe haven't been used to that? If you modify that activity, and then again, maybe physical therapy was listed for a lot of it. Can you get with somebody who's going to teach you different exercises to comfortably work the range of that joint, pump the different muscles around the joint? Again, a great way for our body to get rid of fluid is by running our circulatory system, by letting our circulatory system then get our lymphatic system going, which is kind of the garbage system of our anatomy, where it'll suck extra fluids out of the system that we might not need. So again, by actually using it, then our body can better, quote, absorb that liquid or find something to do with it rather than having it sit there. Because really a lot of the symptoms are just tightness in the back of the knee, pressure around the knee, things like that.
Exactly. And really, we do want to go get it checked out by your primary care doctor just to rule out anything else that could be associated with it. So we want to make sure that it's not like a deep vein thrombosis. We want to make sure that there's not a specific mass, like a cystic mass, a solid mass, like a sarcoma.
Cyst, which...
Yeah. We want to make sure it's not arterial aneurysm in that popliteal area. So there's things that we just want to make sure other things aren't happening. So that's why if you are feeling something in the back of the knee and you haven't got it checked out, you're just like kind of Googling and guessing that it's probably a Baker cyst, it's good to at least just go and get it checked out.
And you use this funny word popliteal, which basically is meaning the back of the knee, the popliteal fossa. That is where the Baker cyst forms. It's the space in the back of the knee. So another word for Baker cyst is a popliteal cyst, actually.
Yes.
So, I mean, and like you said, if your symptoms are severe, if you continue developing this fluid, so I know when I played football, I don't know what I actually did, because a lot of the times when you get bumps and bruises in football, like, you just kind of roll with it. But I had a lot of pain on the outside of my knee, kind of in the IT band area, like where it crosses the knee. So I think I may have done something to the IT band, but there's also a bursa in that area. Mm-hmm. And I had it kick out enough fluid where I had like a big sized water balloon on the outside of my right knee. And I wasn't in pain enough where I couldn't run or I couldn't like do stuff still. It was like, when I pulled my heel to my butt, it definitely felt like the water balloon was going to pop. But I went in and had it drained right before a game. Like I just would have it drained. I would have them wrap it up. You could like see it kind of like leaking into the bandages that I had on there throughout the game and stuff. But I actually had it drained 3 times before it stopped filling up because I wasn't modifying activity. I wasn't taking away the stimulus that was irritating that bursa.
Or addressing the cause.
You know, or addressing the root cause, which probably had to do with me doing things around my hips and ankles so I wasn't putting so much pressure through my knees.
Which brings us to the treatments, like the real treatments of actually...
Segue.
Yeah, so the real treatments of actually getting and assessing the knee, which we've talked about on other podcasts. So podcast 10, we've talked about patellofemoral syndrome, which is just really... general knee pain, right? Mm-hmm. Anterior front of the knee pain. So a little different. We're talking front of the knee pain rather than back of the knee pain, right? Meniscal injury, we've talked about on the podcast, episode 12. So we have talked about meniscus injuries, and that's commonly associated with Baker cysts. So if you want to check out more about you know, what we said about that, good one to check out. As well as we've talked about IT band. So episode 16. So look at that. We've done episodes on all of these things, essentially.
Yeah. So a lot of what we would talk through is, why are we putting extra pressure in that area? What is the underlying root cause as to why we're accumulating this fluid? And a lot of what Jen and I will go to is, okay, joints above and below. Let's check the mobility above and below. Let's see how the mobility at the ankle is doing. Let's see how the mobility at the hip is doing.
Yep.
And then from there, we're going to continue to go on and check strength in those areas.
Yep.
Check, of course, the range of motion at the knee, see if there's any real restrictions there that are kind of glaring up front. But generally, it has to do with us compensating with pressures through the knee because we might be deficient or restricted somewhere else.
Yeah. And it's kind of like overloading that one area where it's not ready to tolerate as much pressure and overload, right? It's okay to load the knees, but we also get to do it from a place of being open at the ankle, being open at the hip, so that we're kind of dispersing this pressure. So when we do go and load the knee, we also have load in the hip. We have loaded from the foot and it, like a stable base. You know, we forget about our toes, our feet and how they work and our ankles, because that's going to take a lot of pressure off of that knee. And then when I go to squat and my knees are going forward a lot, I do have the range of my hips and the range of my ankles to be able to take all of this on a little bit more. And so I think it's so important and valuable, you know, to assess these other areas and then dive into the coordination of how they all work together, because that's a huge thing. And me coming from a gymnastics background, everything was so upright, like never letting, you know, my chest really bend forward. We did squats, we did lunges, we did everything very upright because that was perfect posture for a gymnast, right? However, I then became very quad heavy, very quad dominant mover, you know, and I would put so much pressure into my knees. And I also didn't have the coordinated ability to control my range of motion. So I'd hang out in hyperextension sometimes. So that's like what you were saying, controlling those end ranges and in extension and flexion. So important to even have awareness of, where a lot of people don't realize they might lock out the knee too much and they're not balancing out that quad and hamstring.
I, on the other hand, in football, am like taught to never stand up all the way because I'm always trying to make my body as small as I can to not get hit or to work through a hole or whatever it might be. So I was always forward, flexed at the hips, never fully extending my hips.
Yeah.
And again, when we talked about the area that this often happens, that semimembranosus and gastroc basically are one of our hamstrings and calves, it crosses the ankle and it crosses the hip.
Look right? at that.
Makes sense that we would look at those areas to understand why we might specifically be putting too much tension into those two muscles.
Exactly. If you are a naturally super flexible, hypermobile person, you probably tend to hang out in hyperextension of those knees a lot too. And that's that uncontrolled range that if we don't have control of that, especially through movement, through running, jumping, working out, anything like that, that's when we can start to put a lot of pressure and load where it doesn't need to be. And so again, understanding to gain that awareness, and this is why we do muscle activations in the optimal body as well, because it is not that you don't have access to that, we don't have coordinated awareness of it. And getting that awareness of that brain-body connection back to those muscles that we often neglect is only going to help power you through movement to have more awareness and controlled movement.
Just speaking to my situation, like I definitely know I overuse my hamstrings because of, you know, not using my core enough, not positioning my pelvis because of that. And then once I started to make those changes, I really needed to learn how to re-coordinate a squat. Like my squat has probably changed more in the last couple of months because of all that foundational work I did. Now I'm able to learn how to coordinate that into a full squat with an upright upper back, a nice solid pillar in my low back, getting the depth and the range I need through my hips and my ankles, and having a nice, stable, controlled position at my knees. So all the way through that chain, it's been like a 2-year process to me just to get myself into a full, comfortable squat.
And you were doing a lot of the optimal body stuff.
Yeah, in all honesty, the optimal body was great at, again, helping me learn how to find that core foundation, find those few movements in my hip, like internal rotation that so many people in football athletes specifically are very limited in, and start to open those things up to build that foundation. So again, foundationally, try to look at your ankle mobility, look at your hip mobility. How are you controlling through your core? How are you controlling or holding through your pelvis? And just finding your general tendencies. Because usually it's those tendencies that we've been doing all of this time that kind of caused or sparked our knee's need to feel like it needs to kick out of all of that fluid. So do the foundational work and you'll probably find those one or two things that you might need to address in order to take the pressure off of that knee and get rid of your obliques assists.
I mean, and that's the coolest part, honestly, is the people who have been in the program for months and they're doing all these other things, right? They might be exploring the functional HIIT workouts, which go through the entire body, then the core work and the mobility and all this other stuff. They're touching on all these areas, yet my knee pain went away and my back pain has gone away. And it's not because they're focusing on a specific area. And I hope that you hear this over and over and over again and start to get it. Like, we're talking about the core, we're talking about hips, we're talking about ankles, because it plays a role into the knee. And it's going to change the way that you feel and move. And we have it accessible for you. So hopefully at some point you decide to dive in. Thank you again for joining us on yet another PT Pearl. We just appreciate you so much. And of course, if you need more visuals for each PT Pearl, they are over at DocGenFit on YouTube. There is a whole section for the PT Pearls from the Optimal Body Podcast that you can use to really see what we're talking about. And don't forget, if you really like this, if you're learning from it, share it out, share it with your community. Tell us what you're learning, rate and subscribe to the episode, because there's going to be so many more goodies and PT Pearls along the way. And if you're ready to dive in even deeper, don't forget, we have an Optimal Body membership with an incredible community of movers learning with us and moving in their body. Until next time, thank you again.